Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy. It is August, and that means it is time to talk about how recruiting works. And I cannot believe that we are in year four and for the first time talking to North Carolina coach Joe Bresci, because I'm not sure that there is anybody who is better suited to have this conversation with. Coach Bresci, really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Terry. It's an honor and a privilege to be with you today.
Well, so obviously there is a lot of meat on this bone when it comes to what it's like to recruit to the University of North Carolina, and certainly with all of the changes in the college sports ecosystem in recent years, even more to discuss. But there are three things that I think people really react to and like about these conversations. The first is that the format at the top is consistent, and as a result, folks that listen get to contrast your answers versus some of your colleagues. So we're going to start there. But the second two reasons are stuff that I've heard recently. Number one, it's just conversational, right? So the content, you know, matters less than just the opportunity for you and I to chit-chat for 45 minutes or so. But then the third is, you know, I think by virtue of how long we've known each other and the conversations that we've had, I can ask some direct questions about how it actually works and, you know, try to open up what sometimes to parents, players, feels a little bit like a black box. So really excited to dive in. Conversation always starts in the same spot. How do you describe yourself as an evaluator?
Well, you know, I have to say I've been doing it for a while, and you know, I think if you were to say, what do I look for when I'm sitting on the sidelines or et cetera, I think it's just one part of the whole, right? It's initially what attracts you to an individual. It's his speed, it's his athleticism, it's, you know, what do they bring to the table that is different than most. When you're recruiting the top 1%, you're trying to really dig into what you see on the field and how they not only contribute individually, but also, you know, what kind of teammate are they? How are they responding to goals scored? Are they going to the guy who gave them the assist? Are they going to the guy who slid cross crease to put the ball on the mat? Are they picking up tough ground balls? What is their compete level? So the initial piece of athleticism, I think, is ultimately what everybody looks at. But then you dig in a little bit deeper, and that's the club coaches, the high school coaches, everybody affiliated with that particular individual. And then my favorite part of the whole thing is getting the face-to-face meeting. Love it. Love the home visits, love the school visits, love the opportunity to show families around the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill and just share the great place that Chapel Hill is and the place that I went. And this place means, you know, very rare do you get an opportunity to coach at your alma mater. And for me to be here and to be able to give back to this great university that helped mold me for as many years as I have been, it's fantastic. So that piece to me is the ultimate. When you can have the face-to-face meeting with the young man that comes in, he's got a firm handshake, he's got the eye contact, he's got the passion in his in the way he holds himself, how he treats his mom and dad, how everything looks from a standpoint of just being with them, and our entire staff is involved in the recruiting process, which I love. All of us evaluate during the course of the summer. We get together, we discuss, you know, what that board looks like, and then, you know, invite kids to campus. And I think that's where it really takes off. So I'm all encompassing. You know, our motto is family, academics, lacrosse. We want great individuals, obviously great students, and you're always going to get really good lacrosse players here. But you want guys that fit the chemistry of that locker room and want to be a part of the Carolina family. So that's ultimately what's most important to me.
It comes in no way as a surprise that the opportunity to get to know guys is, you know, chiefly the part of the process that you enjoy. So There are a couple of things that are subtextual to that that I think are pretty helpful, and then I want to dive in on how you like to get to know folks. So the first is, how do you describe the timelines? You know, specifically, obviously, we're transitioning from September 1st to now this year, September 9th, the Wednesday after Labor Day being the moment of first contact where you're able to talk to high school juniors, but then how it proceeds from there in terms of scheduling visits, making offers, taking commitments, and then ultimately finishing up your class.
Yeah, I think what's interesting, it varies year to year, whether it's the IMLCA coaches group changing the calendar or the NCAA changing their calendar and what we can and can't do. So we kind of, you know, work through our compliance office and what we can do. We evaluate over the course of the summer, you know, currently in the 28 realm of things. We love to check in on our wonderful 27 class and how talented they are and see them and get an opportunity to watch them play as well. And then we'll get together as a coaching staff towards the end of the summer here as school is starting in another week or so here in Chapel Hill, and then we'll discuss our board and what that looks like in August, and have our preparation of kind of having discussions with, you know, high school coaches and club coaches, etc. And then on that September 9th, 7 a.m., which is the new time frame for all coaches to make that contact, we'll be on the horn and inviting kids to campus and collecting transcripts and kind of seeing who the right fit is for Carolina, and hopefully we're the right fit for a ton of kids out there as well. So it's pretty consistent, I think, in that regard and in how you approach things. I love the fact that we're making phone calls at 7 a.m. instead of midnight. I think that's better for everybody, especially when you had to stay up till 3 a.m. and call those West Coast kids. So there's always changes in the rules. As you know, the landscape of college athletics continues to change. But, you know, we get so jacked up and fired up for seeing who's out there, who wants the University of North Carolina and this special brand. And like I said, you know, with Coach Murphy on my staff, who's a Tar Heel, and obviously Coach Thompson and Coach Petro, you know, three of the best in the business. And we just, you know, we get together, we may break bread and kind of go over the big board and say, who's got who, you know, 7 a.m. and we dig in and just get prepared. So it's almost like Christmas on September 9th, because you're digging into to who the most talented young men are, who are the great kids, who are the great students. And you just get to go after it. And that's why you love what you do. You know, certainly in a place like Chapel Hill, you're excited to sell the product that North Carolina is.
You mentioned a big board. You also mentioned that you have the privilege and luxury to recruit primarily the top 1% of the class. How many players are on your big board in order to get to, call it a, you know, and we're going to get to this, but a class that ranges somewhere between 8 to 12 athletes?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think when you have ultra-talented coaches like Coach Petromala, who's one of the best in the business, Hall of Famer, just a super guy at the defensive end. You have Coach Thompson, who's a rock star offensive coordinator and former head coach himself, and Pete Murphy, who runs our face-off and wing play and does a ton of other things for us. I mean, everybody wants more on their side of the board. And I think, you know, if you narrow it down, and I try to be a little bit of the voice of reason of, hey, let's keep it to, you know, maybe 30 to 40, maybe 50 max, you know, and then you kind of iron out, okay, once these guys are on the board, how does that look? Who's at the top? Who's there? And this all goes, Terry, with, you know, how does the transcript look? You know, are kids looking at specific schools or specific leagues? As you kind of dig in that September 9th and start to figure out, you know, the comparison of transcript. Are kids interested? Are they interested in us or as much as we are in them? And I think it kind of bounces back and forth with that. So you'll start maybe with 50 and then whittle down to 40 based on, the interest of the individual, but also the interest of, what does the transcript look like and how does that look with admissions at Carolina? So we do a very thorough job of that aspect and kind of dig into it. And, I'd say around the 40 mark, give or take.
You mentioned transcripts, and Carolina sits in a, as I understand it, very advantageous position insofar as, one of the elite public institutions in the United States that is aspirational academically for a lot of kids, but at the same time, relative to some of the highest academic peers, might have a little bit more leniency in admissions standards. What's the floor below which it becomes a challenge for you to advocate for somebody that you would otherwise want to recruit based on his talent and what he brings to the table personality-wise?
Yeah, I think that's something that every institution has a, kind of an academic standard to work with. And knowing that a lot of schools nowadays are test optional, which North Carolina is, that's something that some kids do take, the ACTs, SATs, et cetera, and some don't. And their GPA, their core GPA has to be very high. So, we are not football and we are not basketball. So we are held to a much higher standard as an Olympic sport here than most, which I think is a great thing. Because the last thing, when you're recruiting, as you mentioned, we talk about the top 1% or the elite student athletes, you're looking at them just like everybody. You're going to take the young man who's pushing himself in the classroom because you know he's going to push himself on the field as well. So they go hand in hand. And, the good thing about the University of North Carolina is you don't have to take risks, right? You can kind of dig in and see those, you may have four or five for one of those spots that you want. And you're looking at the transcripts and you're looking at, what their test scores are, possibly if it's test optional, if they did take them. So I think there's a lot of things to consider, but we don't dip in. And I'll give our offensive, not necessarily offensive, but our academic advisor, Mike Green, a little plug here, because we had the highest men's academic GPA. We took down the 12 guys from the fencing team for the male team at up to about a 3.5. So we got the trophy. It was an 8-year reign by the fencers, and we took them down. So, the team GPA was over 3.5. We had, 48 out of 50 were over 3.0. So, just great students, great people. We're going to recruit. If you're going to recruit the best of the best, on the field, you want that in the classroom as well. They go hand in hand.
Right. You've mentioned this a couple times, but I want to dive in a little bit more directly in terms of how it's affected your role. So you're a couple years removed from bringing in John Thompson as your offensive coordinator and have Dave Petromala as your defensive coordinator. How has having two former head coaches on your staff affected your role when it comes to recruiting?
Oh man, it is. I am blessed. I am truly blessed when it comes to having the staff I have. Mentioned Coach Petro, who's just a legend in the game as a player and a coach, and just one of the best all-time guys. Two Italians going at it,
And as a recruiter,
yeah,
a legend as a recruiter.
Oh, yeah, he's elite, man. He is elite, relentless. But I can say the same thing about John Thompson, who is the best of the best, and they're both relationship-driven guys with the recruiting and the recruits coming in and their parents. And, nowadays, Terry, we kind of grew up with their parents. So it's one of those cool things that we have a lot of things in common with the parents that are rolling in here. And I want to make sure I point out Coach Murphy, too. Peter Murphy, who's also a Tar Heel, 97 grad, is he sells this place like I do. We both went here, and that's a unique, when you look at staffs across the country, it's unique when you have a staff that sells, the product that they were a part of. So, I can't tell you how fortunate I am to have these three great men in my program. And, with the University of North Carolina, selling this place and being a part of these young men's lives every day. These guys are elite recruiters. They see what they like. We collaborate all the time on what we like, why we like it, how we're going to approach it, et cetera. Not just trying to get the best players, but the best fit, right, for our program and our offense and our defense. And what does it look on special teams, you know, from a goalie and a faceoff standpoint. So it is a very thorough process with these guys. And these guys are elite recruiters and elite men.
I want to dive in on that a little bit more from the standpoint of the collaboration and the fit, because I think that there's an interesting balance when somebody finds themselves in the situation that you do, which is, you know, bringing in two guys who have done it for so long that they have, I would assume, you know, pretty steadfast methods. But at the same time, I would imagine as the head coach, you feel at least in some way compelled to be like, all right, well, I'm going to trust the way that you evaluate, but I also want you to at least be aware of the way that I evaluate so that we're looking at it either collaboratively, like you said, or in ways that are specifically complementary because of how they contrast. So how do you describe the way in which you asked specifically John and Dave and Peter as well to move toward how you did it versus how much you told them, do not change what you do for my benefit, but be aware of what I do or of how we've done it so that, you know, we can meet in the middle and not overlap in ways that are wasteful, and also not conflict in ways that aren't productive?
Well, I got to tell you that is a great question, because that has been talked about for the last 3 years. And the discussions we've had, we sometimes agree to disagree. But we also collaborate on the why. Like, there's a lot of things slung at the wall, and it's like, I like this and I like this and I like this about this guy. And, you know, and I think that's what makes it so inviting to come in the office and have these conversations on the whiteboard and say, why do we like this guy? And sometimes we'll watch video and we're all bounce around, and all four of us are around a desk watching the video of a guy. And it's like, well, I like his size. You know, Dave was initially big on size, and I'm like, I like the animals, right? Defensively in particular. And Murph's, 5'8", 5'9" on a good day. And he's like, I like the ankle biters. And, so there's all kinds
Let me interrupt you there, because that was something that I noticed about this team this year that I found. Actually, I said it on this podcast, and I said it publicly wrote it publicly a few times. I found it to be so compelling how effective this defense was when, as you mentioned, Dave Petromella defenses had been known for, going 6'4", 6'3", 6'2", across the back line. And this group was, 6 foot, 6 foot 5'11", or I don't know, maybe a couple of those guys it's a little bit generous for. How did that manifest? Because I think that's actually a pretty good indication, right, of exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, and I think the ultimate dream of any defensive coach is compete level of the athlete, right? And when you're talking about Peter Thoman and Cole Asheim and Kai Prohaska and Parker McDonald at the pole and Pete Thoman playing some pole and Grant Pierce, I mean, we had guys who were hungry and their compete level was ultra high. So when you have that kind of motor, I'm a big motor, compete, it doesn't matter how big you are. I mean, you look at I love the Will Bowens of the world, 6'4" and just dominated the middle of the field and carried us to, but I also had Cam Macri, who was 5'9", 5'8", and he was excellent at his. And quite frankly, it helps with matchups, because there's not always the tall, lanky attackman. There's the small, quick guy. And, sometimes you have to do that. But I think as you mentioned, the 5'10", 5'11", maybe 6 feet tall guys, they can kind of match up with anybody, especially if you're Cole Asheim, who's, he's a moose, and he can defend you. And then you got a guy like Pete Thoman, who can play pole and close, played wings on the faceoff and then drop down to close. And so I think having that versatility is a big thing. And you're right, Dave has, he came in with a tall, rangy type thing, and we've kind of shrunk him down a little bit. That I'd give Coach Murph some credit for that, because he was an All-American defenseman out of Garden City, played here, and he's like, I like the 5'9" ankle biters, which is awesome. And it's like, okay, let's meet in the middle at 6 feet. So, you know, at the end of the day, the conversation has been awesome. And quite frankly, we had a conversation yesterday, the three of us, about defensemen. And we talked about the poles, and there's four or five poles that we really like. And there's, you know, four or five close defensemen we really like. And what does that look like? And, you know, so the conversations are rolling on a daily basis. And sometimes it's like, I'm grabbing a cup of water, and he's like, okay, who are your top three? And it's just like, bang, 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 bang. And that's what happens during the course of the season too, which is kind of fun to tackle. You know, what do you see in this defense or this offense that's playing against us, or how they play, and this guy, who would you match up on this guy? So it's just, it's so fun to be a part of. And when you know, love what you do and you're with the people you love, you never work a day in your life, they say, right?
100%. Well, that actually is a nice segue into one of the last general questions that I wanted to ask, which is, how do you design a visit? You've mentioned a few times that you're an alum, right? So your familiarity with this campus exceeds what a lot of your peers who have only ever worked there have in their back pocket. How do you like somebody who's never been to North Carolina that you want to hopefully be a part of your future rosters to experience their first visit?
Yeah, you know, it's thorough. I'm a big believer, and everybody's different in how they approach, but I'm a huge believer in spending time with mom and dad and the individual student athlete, but also allowing our entire staff to have their moments alone with them, so everybody can have an idea of what that looks like. So on a specific part of the tour, whether it's the facilities, whether it's the campus tour, whether it's, you know, our academic center, or, you know, kind of having an opportunity to meet, see, greet everybody. Because if I'm a mom and dad, I want to make sure that I want my son to be dropped off and know who he's going to spend his time with. And it's all of us for sure. I think the most important piece are the student athletes. And sometimes the student athletes on campus, they may not be around in the summer. That's what I love about the September is we're in school. We're digging into, you know, football Saturdays and soccer games and field hockey and, you know, all the success of the programs here. And they're spending time with our guys, because there's no better selling point than the player. So we do the academics, we do a meal, we do all the things that we're able to do, whether it's an official or an unofficial visit. But it's all encompassing. It's our entire staff. It's our players, from freshmen to seniors. It's just having an opportunity for the parents to ask questions, learn about campus. I know all the little nuances of this campus, having, you know, coached here for 18 years and went to school here. It's changed drastically, Terry, since I was here. But in a great way. And it just, you know, it's great. It's just a different feeling when you're selling the experience that you had, which is such a cool thing. You're not trying to be like, oh, I don't know what the business school's about, or I don't know what it is like. We are so connected with this university and all the, you know, the grad schools and the undergrad programs and the admissions here and the dean of this school and the Keenan Flagler Business School, which is one of the best in the country. And they love us over there. They're begging for us to have guys apply for the business school. I mean, business school is, you know, top five in the country. And they're just like, we want more lacrosse players. They have personality. And that's a really cool thing when, you know, the dean of admissions over there is calling you up saying, how many guys are applying? So that's a cool thing. And we try to get them in front of those people, see the school, see the opportunities that are here, but really get to know us is the most important thing. And knowing that their son is going to be well taken care of here is ultimately the most important thing. And I'll tell you this, just a little plug.
Yeah.
My wife, Julie, I have four wonderful daughters, but I have always had this little knack of, in the recruiting process, who would I allow to date my daughter?
Oh my
And
God. Okay.
if I see them walk in and their firm handshake, eye contact, thanks for the opportunity to visit campus, and I'm like, wow, he could date one of my daughters,
There you
or
go.
babysit back in the day when they were little ones.
There, yeah.
So I've had some great ones, but that's a little plug that I kind of, little side stitchy that I look at when I go through the recruiting process with them.
A solid standard for evaluation for sure. But one of the things that you mentioned that kind of was the first time I thought about it is that by virtue of going to an institution, you really protract out your experience based on all of your friends' experiences when they were there, because you were hearing about everything that they were going through, even if, you know, you were, what did you major in? I actually don't know the answer to that question.
I was a communications major.
All right, so you were a communications major, but you were getting, you know, feedback from the health sciences guys and the, you know, the business school guys and the girls that were going into the engineering department or whatever it might be. And so as a result, like for whatever reason, I never really, I was thinking about it through the context of like my own experience, but when I think about my experience in undergrad, it really is again augmented by everything that I was hearing from all my friends at the time. So even if you didn't go through it, you definitely have a, you know, second degree experience or point of view on it and can answer those questions. It's really useful.
Yeah, and we tell our guys, take advantage of the guys in the locker room. I mean, when you have 48-man roster, you take advantage of their, whether you're going through the process and asking them questions, or if you're here, what classes did they like? What professors did they like? You know, and they're working together to kind of make that experience, you know, what that looks like for them may be helpful for them down the line too. The one plug I will say, or the one important factor is, you know, I'm a parent of four daughters that two are in college, one's in grad school, another one graduated, is now working up in Baltimore area for Kelly Benefits, actually. But I think it's so vital that these kids, and as a parent, these kids pick the right place for them. Sometimes, you know, as a parent, you think one thing, hey, I want to push them to this particular school. I think it's their experience. Obviously, there's a lot of factors. There's, you know, there's the money factor, there's this, that, the other thing. But at the end of the day, it is their experience. And I think it's vitally important, you know, when you're looking at different schools, where does the individual want to go? Because that makes for a better experience on their end. So be that supportive parent, but also understand that this is their ride.
So let's get into some specifics. You know, I mentioned at the top that one of the things that makes this conversation so useful is, you know, we can talk about some of the elements of this that don't often get discussed on formats that are public like this. One of the things that I really like to do is dispel notions that I think are incorrect. And this first one, I have some measure of confidence in, but I might be wrong. And if I am, please correct me. My reading of comments on Instagram or message boards or whatever, I get the sense that the lacrosse community at large thinks that NIL dollars are very influential on the decisions that recruits make. My contention is that I don't think NIL dollars are nearly as influential as people think that they are. And by extension, I don't think that they're anywhere nearly as influential. And this is particularly true since the implementation of the clearinghouse that's managed by the CSC and Deloitte that identifies fair market value for NIL deals. It has put such an increased emphasis on scholarships, especially in the wake of a House settlement where the limit on scholarships that you were allowed to offer went from 12.6 to the roster cap, which once DSAs work through the system will be 48. The other thing that, well, let me pause there and say, am I correct in that assessment? Does that match up with your survey of the landscape?
You know, I think every institution is different. Every program is dealing with things differently. You know, the available money in NIL is different. You know, we've heard different ways of getting NIL to certain people, certain individuals. And we've heard the stories, you know, whether it's our own roster or whether it's others. But I love the fact that student athletes are able to get paid in some fashion. You know, and what that looks like with each institution is separate, right? It's like, are you doing shared revenue? Are you not? Where is the increase in scholarships, et cetera? What does the NIL space look like? And how is that being activated? You hear a ton of stories, even in my own athletic department, of how, you know, different ways, and we share those. This is a really important thing too, is we share as coaches ways to help support the student athletes. Is everybody on NIL? Absolutely not. Is it blown out of proportion? I think you really have to do your homework to really understand what everybody is actually getting as opposed to what they're hearing. Because I think that, to your point, is kind of a misconception sometimes. I'm not saying that some aren't getting different things from different institutions, but we've heard a lot of that. You know, so I think ultimately it's just go to each institution, ask those questions. Sometimes that's tough to ask, you know, what is your NIL? You know, it used to be you sit down with student athletes and folks and what does the scholarship money look like? Now it's okay, the scholarship money, but then what's the NIL space look like? So I think it is in our sport, without a doubt. It's at different levels at different institutions, but it's not nearly what you hear out there, in my opinion. You know, will that grow? Possibly.
One of the things that I think is really interesting with respect to North Carolina last summer, the summer of 25, your athletic director announced basically that athletes were being reclassified as in-state as far as tuition is concerned, which, you know, I haven't checked recently, but, you know, I think was somewhere in the neighborhood of a third to half the expense of out-of-state tuition. How did that affect the amount, basically the budget that you had to spend going forward? Was it effectively the amount of dollars that you have stays the same, but now a dollar counts somewhere between 2.5 and 3x what it used to?
100%, Terry. The cool thing is the state of North Carolina made that rule, which was awesome. So all the state schools, state universities, state colleges had the out-of-state tuition count as in-state number. So ultimately, that's a huge piece. So I, you know, in this day and age of you know, the importance of football and basketball and revenue producing, revenue sharing, we were not increased in the total number. We were just told that out-of-state will count as in-state number, which certainly helped us. Now, our women's team is at all 38 full scholarships. We are not close to that. But at the end of the day, we did get a nice increased bump because of the out-of-state versus in-state tuition through the state of North Carolina, which is awesome. So we were not balking at that.
And how do you describe, so just for folks that are unaware, you're not allowed to talk by name about players in your committed class of 2027 because they haven't signed their, whatever the equivalent of their national letter of intent is that they sign now, given that the NLI program no longer exists as it did in its previous format. But I'm allowed to talk about it. Yep. And Inside Lacrosse ranked it number one. And it was a pretty remarkable assemblage of talent. How do you attribute that change and the available scholarship dollars in terms of the success that you had recruiting 27s?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because as you look at each class that you're kind of rolling into, you kind of figure out the numbers and how much balance that you want to have with each class and so forth. And the addition of the scholarship numbers was awesome, fact. But also kind of the rolling out of the COVID time also helped kind of spread things out for us. And we were able to add more scholarship money in that class through the COVID numbers, ironically, who we were trying to even things up. And I'm a big believer, and Willie Scruggs was like this, the Hall of Fame coach at Carolina, back in the day. He rewarded guys. So I've always kept funds to reward guys for their performance. So if you're saying there's 12 scholarships and you're like, hey, this guy's on, $5,000. Well, if he performs both on the field and in the classroom, I'm going to bump him up, right? So back in that initial, it's like, yeah, that's great. But at the end of the day, all of a sudden we get this bump in scholarship money, and I reward some of the guys coming in who will then go out, and all of a sudden the 27s come in. Yeah, it was definitely a bump. But it's also not like, hey, everybody's, living in the lap of luxury here. This is a combination of, hey, we have a bunch of really good classes that we're putting together. Our freshman class is outstanding. Our new class coming in is solid as well. And then the 27 class, and we're looking to put together, stack another class. So I think the scholarship, does it have something to do with it? Sure. But at the end of the day, it's also the product you're selling and the people you're selling and the experience you're selling here at North Carolina. So I think it's a combination of all of it, but you're right. It doesn't hurt.
I can't believe we're 35 minutes into this conversation. We haven't mentioned the name Bill Belichick, because that's another thing that has changed over the last year plus. And you mentioned the timing with respect to when first contact is allowed. One of the things that's outside of your control but can be really influential is the ability to host visits in conjunction with football games. And the thing that's outside of your control is when those games are scheduled for. And I've talked to folks at Ohio State and Notre Dame about this in the sense that it's like, yeah, I mean, if we have a home football game, I believe Coach Stefanski actually talked about this on a podcast a couple years ago. If their first home football game was the third week in September, well, I don't want to call it a disadvantage, but basically it was like, we want to stack all of our visits on that weekend because we think it's the best showpiece example for our institution. You have the additional benefit of having the greatest NFL coach of all time, who famously is really interested in lacrosse. How do you describe the role that Coach Belichick has played in the program, especially when it comes to that whole notion of being able to host visits around football games?
Well, I think the biggest, you talk about the 27 class, nine of our commits were on campus for the first Bill Belichick football game. So that was an enormous, you had Michael Jordan in the stands, you had, Julius Peppers, I mean, you name it, Lawrence Taylor, they were all there. And it was like the who's who of athletics in general, but in sports. But it was so cool to have that experience. Game didn't end up as we hoped, but at the end of the day, the experience for the young men was off the charts. So Coach Belichick has been nothing short of sensational to men's lacrosse. I think he may have more lacrosse gear than I do. He's got a couple sticks in his office. He tosses the ball around. He's done so many great things for us, whether it's meeting with, a recruit or two over the last year or so, or we're sharing athletes now, guys who are dual sport guys. And right now he's got Crew Davis, who's came in mid-year last year and is now playing football there. He's got Jermaine Anderson, who's playing safety. Crew Davis is a tailback, both of which are going to play lacrosse in the spring. So we're sharing guys. We're actually recruiting a young man that'll be in the 28 that is looking to actually 27 class that is looking to play football, and another guy that they want in the 28 class who also plays football and lacrosse. So we're sharing ideas, thoughts, recruits, what does that look like? What does a student athlete want to do, et cetera? And they're doing a shared revenue piece too. And we, obviously we don't have that in lacrosse, but they do. And an opportunity to get shared revenue from them and also play lacrosse is pretty cool for a kid. So he's lined the field that we play on. He comes to our practices. He invites us to his practices. He's so engaging, so, helpful, and just being around the kids. He came to our camp for crying out loud. And the kids are all like, whoa, it's Bill Belichick, you know, and the parents are falling all over themselves to get a picture. And, you know, so he's just been wonderful for us. Obviously, he's got a relationship with Coach Petro and our staff, and he's such a huge lacrosse fan. He comes to our games, and he's talked to our guys. So it's a win-win across the board for men's lacrosse, for sure.
I have a feeling I'm aware of that. Well, not that I have a feeling. He's publicly been offered the 28 recruit that you might be referencing. But with that being said, this trend of the football influence on lacrosse programs is not only really compelling, but also it seems as if it's something that's picking up steam and only going to continue to be a factor. And you know, that's a conversation that I'd like to have at another time, just in terms of, you know, for instance, Virginia has or had a defenseman commit in their 27 class who then, you know, ended up deciding that he wanted to play football at Penn State. How do you assess that risk, right? Insofar as, you know, some of these top players in the 28 class are liable to have really substantial football offers, and given what you just shared about the access to revenue sharing, what used to be a maybe sport and academic decision now becomes a sport, academic, and financial decision. And, you know, that has the effects of changing the calculus pretty considerably for a family. But like I said, a conversation for another time. The place I want to go now is 5-5 roster caps and how it's affecting the way in which you're thinking about the number of players that you want to extend offers to, and ultimately how big you want your 28 class to be, at least at certain intervals. So let's just use the end of this fall, call it October 31st, as the first line of demarcation. How are you thinking about the way that you want to structure your class in order to project your roster for the spring of 2029?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, and I think that's one that we talk about, you know, often as a coaching staff. And I think one of the things, there's so many variables, because not only are you recruiting 28s, you have a 27 class that's coming in that is a class of 11. You have your current roster. You have to look at your current roster in each individual class and who you would like to invite back as part of that fifth year there. And then you have the transfer portal to look at, and how are some of the other leagues going to handle fifth year guys? And what does that look like? And who may be interested? And how does the money work? And do you want to save some scholarship for that group and returning guys on your own roster versus portal guys? So, you know, I think there's a lot of variables that go into it. Without a doubt, the biggest thing for us is you have to be under the cap of 48. So when you're looking at 5 years, you know, and you mentioned it, it's, you know, seven, eight, nine guys in a class now, which is the way it used to be back in the day. I remember when I played, it was 38 guys on the roster. And that's, you know, seven guys, you know, seven, eight, maybe nine. And we had seven spots in admissions. So now it's a little bit different, but you also got to be savvy about, you know, is it seven guys? I mean, seven guys, 35 guys, 40, and then you invite a couple guys back on your own roster and then look at the port. I think it's so vital to just have these conversations almost weekly to decide and see. And, you know, now there's a little bit more pressure. Sure, this is so good for the student athletes to have a fifth year. You and I both wish we had a fifth year. But at the end of the day, it's going to cost, you know, there's been a lot of discussion. It's going to cost, you know, two or three recruits in the 28 class per class, right? So it's like, how does that work? And then it's going to be like, okay, well, if we have to make a change and shrink the roster, do you make cuts on your own roster? Do you make cuts? You know, some have made, it's unfortunate, but some have made some cuts in their current recruiting class in 27. And that there are things that are constantly in motion as everybody tries to navigate this new space. And I think for us, it's being transparent about what is coming to our current roster, current team, current parents, and what is moving forward with the recruiting of the next class to be, right? So I think to answer your question, I think it's probably 7 to 9 range of what it looks like today, you know, and then what happens tomorrow when they change the rule? I don't know.
Well, okay, so yes, I wasn't even going to take the conversation in that direction, but we probably should at least momentarily. But I just want to make a point, which I think, I am a very big believer in the best laid plans notion, or the Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the mouth, which is to say that, yeah, for you and your peers, like right now, taking 7, maybe 8 might be the most optimal option because it gives you the maximum flexibility 3 or 4 years from now. But what I would contend is when the rubber meets the road and the reality of if we don't take that kid, he's going to go to the place that we are going to compete against for an ACC championship. Can we afford to not take him and let that potentially happen? I think that, and I say this all the time in the context of, you know, I have said it all the time at every level, right? Like, you know, you watch an assistant from Albany sits next to an assistant from UMBC watching the same kid play, and you know they're watching their committed kids in the rising senior summer, and they're like, our class is full, and then all of a sudden they're like, I don't know if I can afford to have to play against that kid for 4 years, so we're going to figure out a way to find a room for him on our roster. And you know, obviously you threw out all the variables. One of the things he didn't mention was natural attrition, right? You know, every year there are a couple of guys that can't make it through on the basis of the physical demands of the sport, in addition to, you know, all the other elements, whether it be social or academic. So I guess my point is, in this moment in time, when there's a lot of fear about the comparatively few available roster, you know, spots to commit to in this class, I'm going to take the over on whatever, you know, any prognosticator would say is the likely amount of commits that we have for the ACC's Big Tens on October 31st. So just here, neither here nor there. But you have any thoughts on that notion?
Yeah. What is your over under number?
Well, so again, I think that the most aggressive version of this is 7 spots in a class, which
I'll take
you know,
the
7
over
times.
For us. I'll take
I'm
the
sorry?
Over for us. I'll take
right.
the over for us. Yeah.
Yeah. So if it's 7 times, you know, 5 plus 6 is 77. You know, I'm gonna say that there's definitely going to be more than 77 commits to those 11 schools on October 31st.
Well, and to your point, Terry, this is the thing that is so new, I think, for all of us. It's like 100%, do you want to ever play against this guy in the 28 class? Because if he doesn't come here, he's going to go to X. But then you're looking at the All-American in the portal
right.
from a league that is really talented, that they're not accepting fifth-year guys right now. But if he doesn't come here, he's going to go somewhere else. So and then you're going to play them again. So then there's all those variables of the recruiting, but also the portal, you know, and then how does that look? And does that fit? You know what I'm saying?
For sure. But that guy that you're talking about just finished his sophomore year in college. So while you can take for granted that, yeah, there are going to be great Ivy League fifth-year grad transfers in the portal for the 2029 season, you don't know who they are, right? I mean, you have an idea of who they are right now. But at the same time, like, you know, it's very much a like, are we going to bet on that, right? Especially because, like, to your point, like, the recruitment is going to be the same. Just because he's going to be available doesn't mean that you're going to get him.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And then you have your own team. And quite frankly, the one thing we haven't talked about is culture, right? And what does that look like? And in lacrosse, cultures are so important, and Olympic sports in general, right? I think that's a huge piece of what I believe in, and you know what I stress and what I push for our coaching staff and our players. And these guys are so invested in one another and the program and the university, etc. You know, and I gather as much listening to our guys of how important culture is, and who we bring in is critically important. I mentioned that as high school kids coming in and meeting our players, but also the transfers, right? If there's a transfer, it better be the right fit for this culture. And that's why them meeting our guys is vitally important as well. So, and that's not just our institution, that's everybody's, right? How does that look? How does that feel? Are they on board with what we're doing? And, you know, does that fit work?
I mentioned this a minute ago. I want to be respectful of your time, so we're going to wind down this conversation. But we're recording this on Wednesday morning, August 12th. I'm going to try to post it right away after we finish recording. And just last night, the NCAA redoubled their position on the Colorado injunction that temporarily allowed for players in the high school class of 2022 to seek their fifth year of eligibility. I would characterize this as something that is wildly in flux. I have about a 650-word article written that has not been posted because it needs another 350 words to like flesh out what is going on uncertainty-wise. And I'm just like, I don't know. So with that as context, what do you think about what's going to happen with the high school 22s?
Look, I have no idea. You know, I think all those guys had wonderful careers. You know, it's a bummer that this five-year thing came in at this moment and didn't just get, hey, this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it right now. So everybody had the opportunity before they went pro, before they signed contracts, before, you know, they left for jobs and so forth. I think it's chaos as we know it in college athletics, and you're just trying to wrap your head around the next 24 hours. So to your point with what just came out last night, I mean, it is, who knows what's coming out today. And at the end of the day, man, it's great because it's conversation, right? There's like, it's a zoo. But at the end of the day, man, we're lacrosse players, we're lacrosse coaches. We love the sport. You guys and you do a phenomenal job at just sharing the news and putting lacrosse on the forefront of, you know, people's minds. And I love it. And this is what it's all about. So it's I don't know what's going to happen, but at the end of the day, we'll still be here.
your positivity is incredible and infectious, and you set me up for the perfect note to end on, because I forgot one of the questions that I typically ask at the top, and you kind of just touched on it, and it's the perfect, again, note to end on. There's some version of recruiting that can be miserable, right? You hear about the grind of the summer circuit, sitting in a lawn chair, mm-hmm. It's 95 degrees, you got sunscreen running in your eyes. And then one of the things that Lars Tiffany shared that continues to ring in my ears is that when you recruit at the level that you guys do and you play at the level that you do, on the playing side, you're used to winning 70, 80, sometimes 90, sometimes more percent of your games. But just the nature of recruiting is that you typically, I mean, you said you're probably going to have a big board of about 40 in order to make 11. That suggests that you win about 25% of the battles, which is another reason that recruiting might kind of suck, because you lose a little bit more in the fall than you do in the spring. So with those two elements as context, let me ask the final question, which is, do you love recruiting?
Oh, man, I love it. I love it because I get to meet new people. You watch these kids kind of all summer as a coaching staff, all of us do. But then you get to meet them and you get to feel kind of who they are and where they're from and their parents and their families and, you know, whether it's home visits or school visits. And I absolutely love it. You get to read them when they walk through the door. Is their shirt tucked in? The phone's off? Is it eye contact? Firm handshake? You know, I tell this story all the time when my man Chris Gray walked through the door. I stayed in our lobby and I watched him open the door for his mom and dad. They walked in. He came over. He had long khaki pants on, polo shirt tucked in. Came over, firm handshake, eye contact, said, "Coach, thanks for the opportunity to have me to North Carolina." And he proceeded to open the door 10 times for his mom and dad, elevator, et cetera. And I was like, I want him. And it was just so simple, but yet so effective to kind of go through that process. Now, nobody's perfect, right? But at the end of the day, you get an opportunity to sell a place, which I think Carolina sells itself, but you get the chance to sell a place to people who are vitally interested in your program and you as people. And I love sharing it. I mean, there is no better place than to share Chapel Hill to kids who are just, their eyes are bulging out of their head and they're just like, oh my God, this place is unbelievable. Everything's Carolina blue, even the trash bags. So, you know, at the end of the day, I love recruiting. And yes, you know, it might be 25% on average, Terry, but our 27 class was probably about 75%, baby.
I'm catching a good moment then. Yeah,
it was. It was a really good one.
Joe Bresci, this was great. Really appreciate your time on the How Recruiting Works podcast. Hope that you find some 28s that you feel like are at a caliber to be able to date one of your daughters.
We will, Terry. And thanks for having me. Really appreciate all you do for the sport of lacrosse.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.